The book of Deuteronomy, where we had our first reading today, is the last of the five books of Moses. And traditionally, people believed that Moses wrote Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. But as we pointed out this morning in the adult form in our Bible study, how is it that Moses would have written his own eulogy, which comes before the end of Deuteronomy? So clearly, he didn't write his own death scene. He didn't know what happened. But it was a sort of historical belief that he wrote these books. In reality, they were written by several different authors over several hundreds of years. And our text for today, though, is presented as being the end of a really long sermon. If you go and you look in Deuteronomy, it is 15 long chapters that Moses is telling the people what they should do. And it's at the end of their 40-year journey in the wilderness, and he has this collection of laws and information and useful hints about what they should do that he shares with them. And so there is information about worship and how they should be a holy people and what that meant. There's information about all kinds of processes and procedures about what you do with the space for worship and what you do inside of that space. There's information about justice and being a just people and how to live in community. And then at the very end, there is today's passage, which is all about thankfulness. The people have been wandering in the wilderness. They've been going in circles for 40 years, moving closer and closer to the land that God promised them. And they've learned a lot. And now they are just about to get there. They are just about to go over the last ridge of mountains and into the place Moses has seen it. It looks good. And so Moses is telling them what they should do at the beginning of every harvest. They haven't had harvests while they've been in the wilderness because they kept moving from place to place. And so now they're going to have land and they're going to be able to be settled. And so he says, your very first harvest, this is what you are to do. And you are to do this every year at the beginning of the harvest time. Now, they're to bring gifts. And unlike some of the other gifts that the people are told to bring to the altar of God, these offerings are not to be a tithe. There is no sense in which he says, bring 10% of everything that you gather or bring so much. It's just, you're supposed to bring an abundance. It is to fill a basket, it says. And they are supposed to bring enough food to have a feast for the farmer, all of the people who lived on his property, his wife, his kids, the people who work for him, the servants that he might have, the slaves that he owns, anyone who is under his care, there is be enough in that basket for them and some left over. And they aren't supposed to just drop their offering off and then head home. There's a whole ritual and a liturgy, and it comes in the form of a story. A long time ago, God promised our ancestors that he would give us this land. And today I am thanking God for keeping that promise and giving me a share of the land. My ancestor was homeless. He was a nomad. It says in our text he was a wandering Aramean, but the words in Hebrew are more like saying that he is a destitute, lost person, like a lost sheep that has little hope of being found and is probably going to die if somebody doesn't find him soon. He was a wandering Aramean, a man in need, cut off from his people, but the Lord watched over him wherever he went. There were only a few people in his family. He took them to Egypt because it was a place that seemed safe for them, but when they got there, they were immigrants with no land, no connections. But as time went by, they became a mighty nation of many people, and yet they still had no real home. Our family was great, but our success only got us into trouble and led to our oppression. The Egyptians were cruel. They mistreated our people and forced us into slavery. They had no pity for us. There was no hope in sight. And so we cried out to the Eternal One, and we called to the God of Abraham and Jacob, to the God of our ancestors, and we prayed for help, and God heard our cries. God saw our affliction and knew that we were in trouble. God had compassion for us, and so the Lord terrified the Egyptians with mighty miracles, with signs and wonders, and he tested them with terrible plagues. He showed them that he was the real God, the true God, with all of the amazing things that he did. And he delivered us from oppression and brought us to this new place. He ended our homelessness, and God gave us this place of our own, and the Lord was faithful to the promises that were made. And so now I am here with my basket, filled with the very first fruits, with the best of the crops that God gave me. Now, part of what I love about this passage is how the gifts were to be used. They are to bring this basket, and it is to be a celebration, a party. But the offerings were not so much for the family or for the people that were around working at the temple, but rather they were for people who had no land of their own. The gift of the land was significant. That was the thing that they journeyed for 40 years to have, a land of their own. But there were people in their community who could not have land, widows, orphans who had no fathers, refugees from other countries who came and lived with them, and the Levites who were called to serve as priests for the whole nation. And so instead of being given a chunk of land, the family of Levi was given a job to do, to lead worship. And so that basket of food was to feed all of those groups of people, and their well-being was dependent on the faithfulness of their community. Now, whether you call it a ritual or a liturgy or a recitation, this confession of faith that Moses instructs the people to use is a story. It is their central creed. It is the most important story that your Jewish brothers and sisters will tell you. My father was a wandering Aramean. It is the central creed of their faith. It is shared at the festival of the first fruits, and also it is told at Passover. With the recitation of the story, the community remembers who they are and who they belong to. And if they know the story really well enough, you don't have to even say much of anything. But all you have to say is, a wandering Aramean was my father, and they hear the rest of it. And I was a people with no land, and we were oppressed, and God saved us and gave us this land. Just that little bit gets it all started, the whole story. As Christians, we have our own stories. We have our own creeds that help us to define us ourselves both as individuals and also as a community. And Professor Brian Jones says that this is because memory is the substance of identity. When we forget, he says, we are diminished and our self shrivels, as those who have tended a loved one with Alzheimer's are painfully aware. When we forget our faith stories, the religious self formed by those stories shrinks, and it's replaced by another self, the self produced by competing cultural stories. If we forget our story, if we don't understand our own creeds, our self gets smaller, that part of our identity shrinks, and something is going to take up its place. It's like an opening that needs to be filled, and if you don't fill it with something that means something to you, something else is going to come along, and suddenly football might mean a whole lot more than it used to, or education, or power, or who you are at work, or who you are as a parent. Lots of things, some of them very good, but they can take up that space if we aren't careful. The writers of Deuteronomy were totally on to this whole thing. They knew that if they didn't repeat the stories and create those memories, that something would happen to the people. And so again and again, Moses is telling the people, remember. Remember who you are. Remember what God did for you. Remember that you belong to that God. The Ten Commandments don't start with a thou shall not. They start with, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. That's how it starts, from the very beginning. Remember who you are. Remember who I am. Remember what I've done for you. The call to remember and to tell the stories of God's faithfulness occurs over 30 times just in the book of Deuteronomy. And as Joan says, it is a drumbeat so insistent that the reader senses that Moses knew that the people, once they were settled, would forget themselves and their God. And they do. They forget who they are, and that forgetting comes with consequences, and they lose the land that was their treasure. They lose the power that went with it. They lose their sense of family, and they are scattered. They are sent to places like Babylon. They are sent to Persia. They are sent away, and they lose who they are because they didn't remember. In verse 11 of our reading, the command is given to provide this celebratory meal. God says to the people, throw a party, a banquet of the gifts that you've received. And it has to include the whole community, because not everyone would share in God's gift of land, but everyone was to share in its bounty. And they were to share it at the same table, not because the landowner had grown the food, was such a good person, but because God said, this is how we take care of things. This is how we take care of each other. We come, we tell our stories, we harvest what the gifts that God has given, and then we share them. That sharing has to be a part of the story. And so they gathered together, the household, the children, the workers, the slaves, the widows, the orphans, the refugees, the aliens, and those who were dependent on the community for their daily bread. And it is then that the story is complete, when everyone is gathered and fed. Stories are important. To me, they are one of the most important gifts that God has given us, the ability to tell a story, and they are particularly important when they teach us something about ourselves. And so in the same way that the Jews have this story from Deuteronomy 26, the church has created creeds that help us to understand our faith, and they come in the shape of stories. I don't know how many times I've had to tell confirmation kids, I want you to memorize the Apostles' Creed, and the look on their faces is like, oh my goodness, are you crazy, lady? That's a big, long thing to memorize. It's a story. Do you know the story? You do. You may not understand how well you know it. You may think this morning that you need to read the Apostles' Creed out of your bulletin. I'm betting you know it better than you think you do. I believe in God the Father, the creator of heaven and earth. In that little sentence is a whole story about who our God is. Our God is a God we call Father. That is incredible and different and new. That was not the way it was before Jesus. I believe that my Father, my God, created heaven and earth, everything. It's an A to Z expression. There's a whole story in there, and we need to know that story, and we need to know the story of Jesus and what happened to him. And if you think that last article of the Creed isn't a story, think again. It is your story. Who are you? You are one who knows that you are saved and redeemed, that you are a part of the community of saints, that you are forgiven, that you will have life everlasting. That is your story. So by golly, you better know it. Isaac Dinesen once wrote that to be a person is to have a story to tell. Annette Simmons says, if you wish to influence an individual or a group to embrace a particular value in their daily lives, tell them a compelling story. It's part of why we're here today, is in the hopes that I will tell you a compelling story. That Dave read you some compelling stories, that you heard some out having coffee, that you heard some down in the adult forum or at Sunday school, because those are the things we need to have that sense of being filled up and know who we are. Sunday school, the place where many of us learned compelling stories, is not ever going to be the same as it was in 1967 when I was in first grade. It's never going to look like that ever again. But that doesn't mean that we don't teach our children these stories. They need to know them. They need to have them ingrained inside of them. It needs to be a part of their identity. When I was a little girl, one of my favorite things to do on car trips, and we would take long car trips with it seemed like days and days of driving. And one of my favorite things to make the time go by, because of course there were no videos to be shown in the back seat. And I had a sister who got sick if she read a book. And we'd say, Mom, could you tell us a story? It made the journey different to hear those stories. And after a while, I mean, I can tell some of my mother's stories word for word the way she has always told them, because I heard them again and again and again. I could tell you the story about when she was lost when she was 4 years old and she was in Duluth and somehow found her way to the police station and they brought her home. She wasn't afraid for a minute. Tells me all kinds of things about my brave mother, her adventurous self. We need to tell the stories of our God to each other and to our children, and we need to tell them to those people, those older folks maybe who don't remember the stories as well as they used to, because those stories are some of the last ones to leave us. We keep telling them again and again. Storytelling in the form of both personal narratives and the established literary tradition give us a fuller understanding of ourselves and the experience of others. The whole point of stories is not solution or resolutions, but a broadening and even a heightening of our struggles. They remind us of what is important in life. They admonish us. They point us in new directions. They engage us in self-reflections and sometimes inspire us to lead lives of moral integrity. The beauty of a story is in its openness, the way you or I can take it in and use it for ourselves. Don't fool yourself. Stories always mean something, and they can always change things, but you have to know them in order to be able to tell them. We cannot expect our children or even ourselves to retain those stories and to be filled up with that kind of faith if we don't put ourselves in the way of the storytellers. Become a storyteller. This morning, I did not teach the adult forum. I barely led it. The people who were gathered told their stories about their Bibles and about their faith and about their childhood and about what was important to them. All in this little library of a book. All came out of their Bibles. It was incredible. Brooke is planning his funeral. It's all in his Bible. And two parts, yes. He has enough material for two services, folks, so keep that in mind. But what a lovely thing it is that to open that book and to say, here are the things that were important. Here are Brooke's stories woven in together with the stories that come in his Bible, color-coded and detailed. If you don't have one, get a book and start writing in it. Know your stories. Tell them to your children. Tell them to each other. They are the best thing that we have going. People will come to this place if you tell them those stories and they can understand why those stories are so important to you. You are the ones who can spread those stories and spread those invitations. Let them see what's important to you. Let them know that you have something special to share. And then invite them to come with you. And maybe they will come and hear at least one compelling story on a Sunday morning.